everyone. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, your source for all things conservative. Today, we're diving into some hot topics that are sure to get you talking, or we hope. First up, let's talk about Kamala Harris and her recent debate performance. What a show! Harris came out swinging with her sharp jabs and creative storytelling. And we do mean creative. If her campaign had a dollar for every time she bent the truth, they'd probably be able to fund a new infrastructure plan. The backlash she's facing is almost as entertaining as her performance. Who knew a debate could be such a masterclass in fiction writing? Next, we have the green activist pushing lithium batteries as the solution to all our problems. Sure, they're great for the environment until they spontaneously combust. It's like they're saying, let's save the planet one fiery explosion at a time. Who needs a campfire when you can just park your Tesla at the campsite? And finally, let's wrap up with the bizarre claims about Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, supposedly turning our beloved pets into dinner. Yes, you heard that right. Apparently, Fido and Fluffy are now on the menu. But don't worry, folks. Local leaders are stepping up to assure us that this culinary trend is now part of Haitian culture. So no need to panic. Your pets are safe for now until you order takeout. So sit back, relax, and let's unpack these stories together. Feel free to tweak any part of what we're about to say with your comments. This is William Del Pilar once again, and I'm here with G. Mangani. G with a casual look today.
Just came back from a football game.
And will join us in a few moments, I hope, as soon as we get her with the invite link back in. She's struggling to get in, people. Annette is our female companion, brings the nice motherly side to us. G, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. She brings that softer touch than we do.
Well, she should be in any second, but let's get going here.
Yeah.
First up on the topic is, and we talked about this Tuesday night after the debate, but, you know, it was I don't want to say it was a rush job we did as much as, you know, a few days later, the backlash is still happening. So I thought it was, hey, let's continue to talk, but let's focus in on some of Kamala's debate lies, a masterclass in misinformation and muddled facts. You know, I'm going to give a hat tip to the Washington Examiner, their article, fact-checking the Harris claims that ABC News wouldn't. I'll ask Big John, our producer, to make sure that link gets into the podcast notes once we put this on our social media profiles. But let's just jump right into it. Well, before that, Gene, give us your thoughts once again on your overall thoughts on the debate.
Yeah, so when I think back to our, what was it, Tuesday, right? I'm losing right. My days here. It was Tuesday, right. So thinking back to then, it's like you're trying to drink cold brew that's only been in the refrigerator for about 5 minutes, right? So we're coming here and giving our analysis, and it has to be off the cuff, which many times is probably the good first feel, and a lot of that hasn't changed. And I have to give you props, William, because you said that the bias of the moderators will come back to bite them, and that's exactly what's happening, right? The bias of the moderators are coming back to bite them. And, you know, I know we're going to get into it a little more. I don't want to steal your thunder, but I do have to say, going back and looking at her first answer, right? The first answer, the question was, and this is what turned the 1980 election on its head. The question was, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, right? And that was asked by actually the candidate, Ronald Reagan. And she didn't answer that. She answered it with this huge word salad that when I look back at the reaction of the independents, their brains are hurting. Like, what did she just say? Like, she's going to throw $25,000 here to first-time home buyers and give $50,000 tax deduction, not money, but tax deduction to small business owners who might never make a profit. So the tax deduction is useless in that point. So, my take has only firmed up that, yes, it was a draw stylistically, or maybe a little win for Kamala stylistically. In the long run, people are like saying, I don't know exactly what she said.
Right. Annette, thank you for joining us.
I'm here.
Before we get into Kamala's debate lines, I just wanted you to give your thoughts overall, once again, on what's your thoughts about the debate overall from Tuesday night?
Yeah, I'm a little regretful of some of the things I said, although those were my first responses, and so that was how I was suggesting it, you know, real time. But since then, I've had a little more time to reflect and also listen. You know, we're all listening to people talking all the time about these things. And I feel like I got to give it to you, William. I feel like your automatic response, sort of like the fix is in, and listening back to how many times, having people then do some playback with how many times, like, they interrupted him. They gave her another chance. They never really gave her any difficult questions. That there was a real bias there, and that maybe I was so interested in the content, I wasn't seeing that they were giving her the bias all the time and that it was against Trump. How frustrating that must have been for him to be sitting there and being on the receiving end of that. But when it was played back to me, I was like, oh my gosh, William was right. It was, how did I not see it?
Oh, well, I wish I was married to both of you guys. I'm waiting for my wife to go, hey, yeah, you were right. No, I'm kidding. At the end of the day, I'm a hardcore conservative.
Yep.
But I'm a firm believer in the truth shall set you free. I used to believe that. I no longer believe that after the 2012 election with a lot of black Americans. I'm like, okay, after 4 years of Obama, you see the truth. And they still voted for him because of culture and color, and that crushed me because I used to always believe that. And ever since then, I look at things I really take a harder look at these debates, especially with the fact of how Candy Crowley turned that debate on its head by purposely lying for Obama. And that's what I saw here. So when I look at these things, I'm like, let's have a fair debate. So when I see it going sideways, that's what clicks in more so than the content. Because the content, I have my opinions. I do tons of research. I don't even do tons of research. I just do tons of reading every day. So I know a lot of this. But it wasn't just David Muir and Kamala's, it turns out, her sorority sister, the other woman that was there. And I think, Jean, that's why she was silent at times. You know, was but it came out that was her sorority sister. But it was what you said in that kind of frustrated me, because you knew. It's kind of like when they asked her, what was it, the economy or fracking or whatever, and then she goes, I'm going to answer that, but first, let's talk about his rallies. And I'm like, no! In a candy store, because you knew Trump was going to take the debate. Rallies? Oh, that's my stick. You know, like, no, stay on topic, you know. So he frustrated me too. But I expected that out of Trump because it's who and what he is. But I thought the debate moderators went way too far. And the reason we're talking about this today, it wasn't on tap, is because the backlash is still continuing. Democrats, a couple of hardcore Democrats even said, whoa, that was wrong. ABC, one of them says an investigation should be done on ABC. And I think what's happening is they're having buyer's remorse in the cheating game, meaning we cheated way too much. It became so obvious that's all they're talking about. And I also believe that's why Kamala now is like, no, let's debate again. Let's have another one. And Trump's like, why? Why bother? And I agree with Trump. The only way I would have another debate was my moderators, my network, and Fox isn't even friendly to Trump anymore. But that's who we're being. Yeah, we're going to do one more. It's going to be on Fox. And I did not know that ABC is actually the worst of the law in the bias against Trump. It's like 97% negative against Trump. And David Muir, like I said, I never heard of him. I don't even remember the other moderator's name right now. I don't care enough about her to remember. I don't say that in a negative way. She was a non-factor. It was David Muir that was doing the bad thing. I thought Most people don't know who he is because his demographic is the older white audience that tunes in to a local, to a national news at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., you know, on ABC. So that's the only time you ever see him or hear about him. So I thought his first foray into national politics and being seen by the biggest audience he's ever encountered was a big negative for him. So I don't even think he realizes the damage he did to himself, but I don't think he cares. You know, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah, to that point. No, that was a good point because I think on his network, I saw something about 100% or maybe 95% of Kamala's stories are positive and somewhere around 95% of Donald Trump's stories are negative. So you know what kind of audience he's catering to. So he's not losing people, right? So that I believe that to him, maybe it played to his benefit that a lot of people on the left go, hey, this guy's really nice to us. Let's watch him more.
You know, he's tall. He's got the facial expressions, but, he's suave. I don't think he's as
good-looking
as people think he is. I'm like, really? That's
really
but he's suave.
I think he takes himself a little too seriously. No, I mean...
You know, back in the day, that was something that was expected. But that's back in the 60s and 70s and maybe the early
80s. Or...
Exactly. But now we're so biased, so tribalistic, I don't think people even care about that. Except for women. It's sad, but statistics and demographics show having beautiful women does make a difference, you know. But for men, I think, you get what you get, you know. And hey, if his audience loves him, God bless him, you know.
Didn't you just say his audience was white men? Okay, never mind. Let's move on.
All right, so let's get down to it. Again, I'm going to give props to the Washington Examiner. Their article was fact-checking the Harris claims that ABC News wouldn't. And I went to other sources, but they had it nice and pretty. You know, so the first one they pointed out was the unemployment claim. Harris stated Donald Trump left us the worst unemployment since the Great Depression. And I started fuming because we know why that was the case. And it was because of COVID. But people here have short memories and that's what she was counting on. When you heard that, unemployment was at 6.3% when Biden and Harris took office, you know, and that was, COVID was happening, government mandates had forced businesses to close temporarily, which I'm not going to get into that because I get angry at the fact that Albertsons was and Vons and Kroger's and all those and Target and Walmart's were all open and the mom and pop shops were forcibly shut down. Well, that's a different discussion. But in the 3 years before the pandemic, Trump brought unemployment down to 3.5%. So when that first slide, David Muir did not report on it. Annette, when you heard that, what was your first thought in the sense of like, no big deal, Trump should have countered, or the fix is in right away in terms of what we saw happen that night?
It was starting. It was just a way to get people to start to, I mean, obviously that was low-hanging fruit. Is the first thing I thought, actually. That's low-hanging fruit. I mean, everybody knows that it was about COVID. I think that I'm still looking back at how I was feeling about it at the time, and I'm thinking to myself that it was low-hanging fruit to be expected. That was an easy one, I think, though, to deflect and that people didn't buy, quite honestly, William. I think.
Okay, that was my next question. Do you think people bought it?
No, I don't think people bought that one. No, I don't. I think a lot of people just dismissed it and said, give me a break. But I think going more into the interview, there was the worst was yet to come in terms of the lies.
Gotcha. Okay, Gene, before I want your comment on it, on that too, but let's go into the project. The next one was the Project 2025. Harris claimed what you're going to hear tonight is a detailed and dangerous plan called Project 2025 that the former president intends on implementing if he were elected. Now, we all know that's a Heritage Foundation plan that came out in 2023, and Trump had nothing to do with it. There may be conservative aspects of that conservatives, I don't even know what's in it. I've never looked at it, but I'm sure there's probably a few conservative aspects in there that I'm like, oh, I like that, you know. But Trump disowned that. So give me your thoughts first on the unemployment number in terms of what Harris said, and then tell me your thoughts on Project 2025.
I think Kamala Harris must think that the COVID vaccine gave us all collective amnesia, because we all know COVID was happening at the time, right? So unemployment could have been 50%. And we all go, okay, that's because of COVID. Trump and Pence said stay home at least for a few months. And then they said that's mismanaging. And then, no, go back to work. No, that's mismanaging the pandemic. So, I mean, the left, especially Kamala and Biden, they're all over the place on that. But I will say that under Obama, unemployment was north of 7%. And I don't know if that was for a few months. I can't recall. Or whether it was at least for a whole year. So just even that claim, David Muir did not even try to get the statistics done, right? So if the claim that Mark Penn of the Clinton administration is true, Mark Penn is saying that the questions were given to Kamala in advance, or at similar questions saying this is the order we're going into. Well, David Muir, and we'll get to it later, but David Muir knew which ones to already gather the facts on, because he knew who he needed to fact check, and it was not Kamala. So going on to Project 2025, when she said it, I believe she said
just real quick, unemployment was, it had been leaning for about a year, if I'm correct, at about 12, in double digits. And that's where we talked about this in the previous show. You explained to us the index, or six indexes, and they switched it around. So that 12.5% all of a sudden became 7%, because no president had been reelected with double digit unemployment, because just of the negativity of that. So yeah, it has been lingering for a while. So you're right. It's a terrible lie, but in a way, you know, good and well, she got away with it for some people, because we have short memories. Yeah, and they're going to believe her. David Muir didn't do his job.
And remember when Trump was running, in 2016, and he said, I'm going to bring all these jobs back. And Obama said, what are you going to do, wave a magic wand? Like, what's your little magic? And boom, we had a jobs boom in 2017 because of breaking down regulation and letting companies take risks with people. If you make it too expensive to hire people. Say again?
It was a magic wand indeed.
Right. And I believe Trump did say, there's my magic wand, right? So, yeah, but the moderators are not interested in fact-checking anything Kamala Harris said. And I believe that there was a statement that they, and I don't know who said it, maybe it was a contributor somewhere, but they looked at the CNN debate and they said, Trump said too many things that the CNN moderators just let go, right? So they came ready to counter Trump, but then now Kamala's doing this and they didn't, they just let it go, I guess. So. And Project 2025, I mean, my thought on that is really simple. And I had this thought during the debate. There was one question where she talked about Project 2025. And then I don't remember which question it was, but Trump disavowed it as the response, right? And then there was another question later on. I don't know if it was the next question or two questions later. And Kamala was on autopilot. It was like they programmed her brain and she just says, well, Trump's going to use 2025. And it's like, are you even listening to the debate? I mean, she was so rehearsed, so polished, that when you see the interview that she gave to a local Pennsylvania station today, maybe it's Philadelphia, or maybe just, I forgot where in Pennsylvania. Man, she looked like she was nervous as all get out. I mean, it was like she had not prepared for this. And it was a puff piece. It was a puff piece interview. So, when she gets on this autopilot, you wind her up. She's not listening to whatever Trump's saying. She's more interested in making faces.
Yeah, and that has become a critique. Okay, let's get into next week. So I say this all the time, and maybe I'm being too male chauvinistic, so my apologies. The late-term abortion claim. Now, when I researched this one out, I was shocked. I didn't realize that there are actual states. Harris stated, nowhere in America is a woman carrying a pregnancy to term and asking for an abortion. I did not know there are at least seven states in Washington, D.C. that allow abortions at any point in the pregnancy. I did not know that. And David Muir corrected Trump, saying no state allows that, if I remember also. Some other states have brought exception to gestational limits, and then when you respond, if you can explain that to me, because I don't know what that means. And then most abortions occur before 13 weeks, and then a small percentage occur later. But over 900,000, this is depressing. especially in a country where our birth rates are dropping to 1.6 on a scale of 1 to 4, meaning we are not reproducing as we should. Over 900,000 abortions are performed annually. States like Minnesota and Colorado legally allow abortions in the final month of pregnancy. So when you hear her and the tag team go that nowhere in America is a woman carrying a pregnancy to term, and I throw this at, how big of a lie, how devastating is that in people not hearing the actual truth? Because most women, and what I've read and who I've spoken to, they're all, most of them are pro-choice, but not for late-term abortions. So to me, this was a devastating lie to cover up the truth. What are your thoughts on that, Annette?
I agree, and you're going to laugh, William. I actually had a dream about this. And in the dream, I was talking to you and saying something like, you know, legal but rare. And then when you throw this in there, because I wouldn't have believed it either, and that's why it's such a devastating lie, because it seems so abhorrent that you have a disbelief in your mind thinking, no, that can't be, because nobody would ever do that, and nobody would ever allow for that. And that seems like a blatant lie. I mean, it seems that way to me. So you giving me the facts, and now knowing the facts as I do, that in some states, it doesn't matter if it's 12 weeks or 6 weeks and there's a heartbeat, or 12 weeks in the first trimester, but that at any point in gestation, which is how many weeks that you're pregnant, and the body is...
I'm sorry, that was me. Sorry, I apologize.
I think this is a devastating lie. I think most people would be absolutely flabbergasted at the facts. So they cover, it's a cover up. It's to make it seem like it's really not happening, to make it seem like the thing that people would actually be about the most shocked and upset by, to think that a child would have be aborted, like when it already could be living outside the womb, is not happening. So that kind of a cover up, I think, is, the word I guess I would say is devastating, because people would be appalled and shocked and outraged, and there would be a backlash if they knew that was true.
That brings me up to our point that we were talking about and we were trying to get a hold of when we talked about this Tuesday night. And then if you can answer the G, you can answer all this. I think this type of news or information that somebody who is a pro-choice woman but doesn't believe in late term, she would rethink who she would vote for in this type of situation. Am I wrong? I mean, because I know a lot of Christian women. When I say Christian, they're God-fearing, they go to church, they do that. And they won't talk about it publicly, but they are pro-choice. And it's just not because they want an abortion. They want their, I mean, women fought for their rights to choose. And I'm not talking about abortion, whether they want a career, want to be a mom, whatever. So they view anything taking that choice away as bad. So it's not that they agree for abortion, but they don't want any choice taken away. But I think this is the type of information where they go, whoa. Maybe I should be thinking about voting for Trump. I think hiding and lying about this, that's what makes this so devastating. And Eric, you can answer that point quickly, and then we'll go to G.
Yeah, like I said, I think because of that, there'd be a backlash. Because honestly, William, there is such a distasteful reaction to thinking that a baby at that level and later levels of gestation as a baby is fully formed, and now often, especially with prenatal care, living outside the womb, successfully living outside the womb, I think that a lot of people would be have such a disgust and a disdain for that if they understood that was real, that there would be a backlash, and you're right, a change in who they vote for.
Oh, and real quick, before we go to G, what does it mean by some other states have broad exceptions to gestational limits? Gestational, what's that for us men out here?
Gestational limits, like how long the baby is, how many weeks you're pregnant.
Gotcha. 40 weeks
is your full gestation. That's like the full 10 months. You know, 6 weeks is the heartbeat. 12 weeks is your first trimester.
Okay, gotcha. So it's a term to use to help determine the baby, where the baby's at. Okay, so G, your thoughts on how devastating this lie is in terms of, could it have swayed some of the women on the fence?
No, I think, first of all, what Trump was specifically arguing about was the governor of Virginia Not the current one. The one before Youngkin. I can't remember his name right now.
Ralph Northam.
Yeah, that's it. Governor Northam. He and I believe they actually brought a bill to the legislature of Virginia, which allowed no limits at all. And literally, you could give birth and then decide whether you want the baby or not. That's what the governor was pushing for. And that's what Trump was talking about. Like, this is the belief of the governor of Virginia. He didn't say that that was actual policy there, but that they're hell bent on, no, that's false. That's false. No state allows this. No state allows this, right? So, okay, technically, you could say that if you try an abortion at 39 weeks and it fails and the baby is alive, then you can finish the abortion, right? So I believe the abortion law allows for that. But I think what they're trying to say is nowhere in America can you give birth and then kill the baby, right? So it was like this fine line of, okay, one, Trump was not even arguing that that exists. And then two, you know, that's not, okay, so maybe that's technically true, but you can try an abortion 39 and a half weeks or the day before you go into labor. And if it fails, then you could abort the life of the baby, right? So I just thought that they were trying to get a zinger into Trump for some reason. And I think
they were twisting it, Gene. He was not talking about states allow it, and they made it a situation where what he said, they were saying, no, that's not – what they were doing is making the public believe what he was saying was law. And he wasn't. He was saying, and the reason I know it's Ralph Northam, you know, and this isn't terrible, but when I think of abortions, I think of over 30 million African American babies. I've had this conversation with my friends who are black, and I'm like, you do, when I tell them that number, they're like, holy bleep, because they don't realize. I'm like, yeah, Marcus Sanger's one who said y'all are like weeds, and you need to be, whatever church she is. I go, that's the whole purpose of Planned Parenthood. You know, so it's easy for me to remember Ralph Northam, because when I think of Ralph Northam, I get my Democrat, Ralph Northam. You know, we're going to keep those weeds in place. That's how I picture it being said, because that's how vile it is. It's like, I think back to the Margaret Sanger, in terms of how the genetic, what's it called? The genetic, eugenics.
You
keeping certain cultures in their place. And I'll never forget it. She viewed blacks as weeds. And to me, that's why it's not that I'm so pro-life as much as Planned Parenthood is specifically built from the ground up to keep the black culture in place. So when I heard him talking in his accent, you know, that's the first thing that came to mind. And at first I'm like, why do I think like that? And then I'm like, no, it's good that I think like that, because that's how vile that is, you know? Anyway, that's my 2 cents on Ralph Northam. Go ahead, Annette.
But really quickly, you know, you brought up Margaret Sanger, and I wanted to tell you that one of my favorite ethicists, Leon Cass, wrote a really popular paper about reproductive rights, and it's called The Wisdom of Repugnance. And basically he was saying, I mean, his point, which might not really seem that intellectual, was that we had this wisdom about these situations, that we had gone our technology and what we're doing, and that's why it's going to lead into this IVF. I don't know if you're going to talk about the IVF, had gone so far, but we still had to use sort of like this internal compass that we have about some of these things. And then so I do think people are repugnant about having a later term and a gestational life being taken at a later term. But like, we're not listening to that. But I think people do automatically have that innate response when they hear it and we have these discussions.
Right, right. It's just, and that's what made this lie so devastating. They knew if they allowed Trump to keep, if they didn't change the perception, Trump could sway some people. All right, Trump's bloodbath comment. Harris claimed Donald Trump, the candidate, has said in this election there will be a bloodbath if the outcome of this election is not his life. He was talking about the auto industry and tariffs. And if I'm not elected, it's going to be a bloodbath with those costs, you know, the economic consequences. And I knew that. Right? I had forgotten exactly specifically. And I ran out of time, but I had the video propped up for that. But yeah, that's exactly what he was talking about. And she made it seem as if it was a civil war Trump wanted to happen. Gene, your thoughts on that line?
No, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. There would be a bloodbath economically, and they wanted to make It sounds like he's a threat to democracy and he's going to do a riot in Washington, D.C., like they said he did back on January 6th, which was not true. So it's irresponsible and just stupid, I think.
Right. Annette, the only bloodbaths I saw were in 2020 with the BLM riots with over 2 billion in property damage, people, innocent Americans murdered, many put in the hospital. That's the only bloodbath. See, so that's when I get angry. I'm like, really? Y'all talk about bloodbath? Look in the mirror. And which, I mean, who forget that was it CNN or MSNBC? And we've got these friendly riots, and then the fires are burning behind it, you know? So what were your thoughts on the bloodbath live?
My thought was boring. Like, same old from these people. You know what I mean? The way they twist it and concoct it, it is just the same old boring playbook trying to use fear to instill fear in people. Meanwhile, as you said, how much footage do we have of the streets burning, people's businesses being destroyed? You've got to be kidding me. Like, at this point, I roll my eyes at that kind of stuff. And if anybody finds it even slightly believable or scared by it, but it's the same old tactic. And I think a lot of people think that it's a bunch of it. Again, it's boring.
Yeah. It's that's why I think that J6, I'm like, y'all don't know what a freaking insurrection is, you know. All right. So the IVF treatments claim. Harris, I missed this because, you know, I'm trying to write notes down. So I actually missed her saying this, but understand what has been happening under Donald Trump's abortion bans. Couples who pray and dream of having a family are being denied IVF treatments. Yeah. Now, obviously, this claim is misleading because Trump actually came out not too long ago, a few weeks ago, and said, you know, I want to make IVF treatments non-taxable, you know, or free or something to that effect. He hasn't proposed an abortion ban. There's no IVF is legal in all 50 states, and he's advocated for protecting IVF access and proposed forcing private insurance to cover IVF treatments. So all of this stem from a court ruling. And then you were going to comment on this earlier with the abortion. So here's your chance now. What's your thoughts on this big lie?
Wow. Not only is it a lie, I don't think people even understand what is happening with it's not a joke when people talk about even designer babies. It's not a joke that you can go get someone's sperm and get someone's egg and then find a surrogate to have the baby. I mean, it is out. There's not only IVF, there is all kinds of ways to create a child outside the womb, outside of your womb, with someone else's egg, with someone else's sperm. I mean, we're at an all out, I mean, again, the science is way ahead of the ethics on all of this stuff, and all of these banks that have all of these, that have these eggs and that have this sperm, and that you can look at someone's profile to decide. So not only is it untrue, that's so out, that's not even, it's totally true. You can get IVF anywhere. What's even more, it's gone so much further than they're even talking about. I mean, they should really talk about what is happening with reproduction, and they're not, and no one's talking about it. So, yeah, you can have a baby. You don't have to have the baby. It doesn't have to be from you. It can be any, and I know people who have had, I know people personally have had different eggs and different sperm and have created different children and had different people have those children. One lady also carried it in the womb. I mean, all kinds of crazy things are happening. So it is so far from the truth.
Right. You know, it's Gene, your comment real quick. Who needs IVF when you have a turkey baster? When I was a teenager on my AM radio, this woman called in and said after all the, like, 30, 40, 50,000 her husband had spent, her friend told her, take a turkey baster and stand on your head upside down. Swear to God. That's what she said she did, and she said she got pregnant. So who needs IVF when you have a turkey baster?
Well, I just felt the IVF in the back. I guess that's IVF in the back alley, right?
Yeah. So what were your thoughts on that whopper of a lie?
No, I mean, in the end, like, what Trump kept saying over and over and over again is go back to the states. Let the people decide in those states. And, you know, like we had a conversation a few weeks ago, or was it last week? Time flies. maybe if the state bans it, then there's a cooling off period because you got to drive 3 hours to the state over. And it's equivalent to a cooling off period. So you can think on the drive over there or whatnot. But again, Trump's not proposing anything. And his whole goal was to put it back in the state. And Kamala's the one planning to make it a federal law to make every state comply with what she wants, which is pro-choice policies.
Right. Yeah, that bothers me from the progressives, the Democrats, leftists, whatever you want, socialists or communists, whatever you want to call them. It's they want every state to be uniform. And I'm like, well, that's what makes each state unique, is if you don't like it, move. And it's like, why have governors? Why have regions? I mean, let's just have regions. You know, if you're going to make everything uniform, it will save more money from the bureaucracy of every state. Okay, so here's one that really bugs me. It's Charlottesville. There's a
bugs everyone. Designer,
I forget his name, but we got into it. And this guy's an adjunct professor. He teaches journalism. And he pushes the Charlottesville line. Even with Snopes saying, so Harris referenced Trump's fine people on both sides. My main issue is when it's a lie. Two, Trump did more for Black Americans and Latinos than Obama ever did. You know, and that's an ugly truth progressives hate to hear. So, you know, Trump condemned the attack on counter-protesters. In the video, he says, I'm not referring to the neo-Nazis and white nationalists and spy people. And he distinguished that. So when I heard this, I was just fuming. Gee, what was your thought with the Charlottesville lie?
Mm-hmm. No, it's a lie. I remember listening to this press conference on my phone when I was driving from Poway back to Rancho Santa Fe live. I was listening to it. And I heard him say specifically, I don't mean the skinheads and the white supremacists, but there were fine people coming to protest the tearing down of their heritage, right? Their statues, which, okay, if you want to talk about, let's say, General Robert E. Lee, okay, yes, he did join the Confederacy, right? But he became an American again, and he was pardoned for everything, and he was grafted back into American society. So that was a statue of an American. So people were coming out to prevent that statue from being destroyed. And that's what he was talking about, those people who didn't want their heritage destroyed, right? So, but again, like Biden repeats it over and over and over again. Now Kamala is just, you know, robot, wind up, feed Biden live, go, right? And it's annoying. I think what Trump needs to do is come up with like TrumpLies.com. That will get a bunch of independents to go there, and it would be lies about Trump, right? Not lies that Trump tells, but lies about Trump. And this stuff can be debunked and have the videos there, and the video clearly shows. And I've seen several left-wing people, I believe even RFK said it, if I'm not incorrect, but he said he finally saw the Charlottesville videotape of the press conference, and he's like, they've been lying this whole time. Since 2017, they've been lying about what he said. So it's just poor form on Kamala's part.
Your thoughts on Charlottesville lying there?
Yeah, I don't know how it still has any legs, quite honestly, but it keeps on going, I guess, because they like to continue the certain narrative about the kind of person that Trump is. And I actually think, you know, I spoke earlier about when we first started the show and you were talking about, you know, the 2025 or when you were talking about, I'm sorry, what was the first thing that was debunked? Yeah. I mean, I don't think that those get a lot of people, like, really, they have a lot of teeth in them. But this one, I feel like this one has a few people actually questioning it, because I see people on Facebook trying to perpetuate that lie. This lie has gone on and has gained a little more traction than I think some of the others. And that's why I think it's dangerous and unfortunate. I actually think, gee, that's a brilliant idea. What if we had, you know, if there was a place you could go and you could look up and be debunked and you could have the proof that that is not right? So
yeah, I agree. That's a great idea, G. I do agree with that. Okay. Good. Let us move on to a topic that's dear to my heart because I was involved directly in being in the minority and trying to expose it. And that is lithium batteries. Where's it at? in a segment I have titled Green Dreams, Toxic Realities. How climate crusaders conveniently forget to mention the scorching, poisonous downsides of their clean energy revolution. So what the public has no clue on is all over the country are these lithium storage centers where they're putting batteries. Now, they're supposed to put this on the positives, the enhanced grid stability and reliability, the improved integration of renewable energy sources, cost savings through time-shifting energy use. I guess they can flip it on and off at a switch. Efficient peak demand management, rapid response to grid needs, reduced reliance on fossil fuel power plants, and support of energy independence for remote areas. All of that may be true on paper, but it's not reality in real life. Mm-hmm. I know this. I had to deal with it at our board when they put one in our backyard. Now, they always tell you the good side of this. Now, nobody argues about the electric cars until they see $30,000 replacement battery, and the people jump the car because they can't afford a replacement battery, and they go back to their regular gas car, or the junkyards piled up with all the batteries, the cars with these batteries. But I'm talking storage centers, same concept. Supposedly in the UK, they're talking about 48 billion cost savings by 2050. But what they don't tell you is the cost in fires, the cost in job losses in terms of having to shut down the jobs, people not going to work, kids not being able to go to school. So my first thought to you guys is when you hear about these lithium battery storage centers, I would assume your first thoughts are like, oh, that's great news. What do you think, G, when you hear about the green savings, the energy? Good thoughts, I assume, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think right now when electricity is generated, you have to have equal amount of consumption in order for the grid to not overload. So you have to have one for one, but the battery storage allows you to generate more than you are consuming at the time. So kind of like to have a reservoir that you can throttle up and down with. So yeah, it sounds great.
Annette, have you heard anything negative when somebody talks about these storage centers or how lithium or electrical cars is that? In any of these conversations, did anybody ever go, but?
No, it always sounds like it's a utopian dream coming true. But then I read about it and looked it up myself and how they spontaneously combust when they get hot and they burn. I mean, it's literally frightening if you'd research it.
Right, and I knew about this going all the way back to just regular lithium batteries on airplanes or the ones that were in the phones. They would just combust. It had something to do with the air and the height or something like that. That's when I was like, wow, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when I served, they're shoving this down my throat, and I'm like, well, hold on. What about, because I went back to that thought of, these things spontaneously combust, I've read before. This seems like a larger scale. So The property damage is significant. Now, these companies are like the government when it comes to numbers that favor them or numbers that can hurt them. So it's estimated at over $1.2 billion annually in U.S. and Canada in terms of property damage. So take that with a grain of salt in being underestimated. The potential for large-scale incidents is there. To the audience, we just had a fire in Escondido that pretty much shut down that area for more than 3 days. They had to evacuate. I live in Valley Center, which is a good 25, 30 minutes away from where the fire was at. And I came out to greet my wife, help her bring her stuff in from work. And I hadn't been out all day. And I'm like, what the hell is that smell? And I'm like, that's right, there's a fire. She goes, no, babe, that's a lithium fire. You know, I'm like, oh, and the smell was there. And I'm like, oh my God. Now, inhaling any kind of smoke is dangerous. I'm 30 minutes away. We don't even know the damage. They don't talk about the potential health risks. I mentioned property damage, but what about people inhaling these toxic fumes? You know, so before I want to get your guys' comment on these toxic fumes. hydrogen fluoride, a highly corrosive and toxic gas that can cause severe burns to the skin, eyes, and lungs. Now, eyes and lungs, a lot of that stuff can be permanent, you know. Sure, and maybe even the skin. It can lead to deep tissue damage, systemic toxicity, and potential fatal heart arrhythmias, even from small exposures. Then there's hydrogen cyanide. A rapidly adhere cyanide, you freak out, you know, oh, cyanide, you're going to leave a lot of spy movies in the tube, you know, but it's a rapidly acting, highly toxic chemical asphyxia that interferes with cellular respiration. It can cause rapid death due to cellular hypoxia. Then there's phosphoryl fluoride, a colorless toxic gas that can hydrolyze to form hydrofluoric acid when in contact with moisture. Now, ironically, you two live in Rancho Santa Fe, so please don't take this personally. But when I hear this, my first thought is, hold on, you're putting this in middle class. Escondido's a middle class town. You know, that's bordered middle class. So it's never been known as a high income type area. Valley Center's also similarly. You don't see them putting these lithium farms in Bonzo or Rancho Santa Fe, which are beautiful areas. I don't want them in any area. But my take is, you don't put them where your money's or your own investment is coming from. You're always putting them in lower income or working class areas. Escondido is an example. So if, regardless of what area, if you're living in this area, you hear about these toxic gases that I just talked about, would you sit there and be the green climate activist that they demand all of us be? Or would you say, get this the hell out of my neighborhood? Annette.
Get this the hell out of my neighborhood. And what I think this show is so important in this conversation is fired up and wake up. Because it just shows that the government doesn't care about the people. They just don't. We are dispensable to them. And that is why they... And I know people, many people told me that they could, up around the Escondido area, that they could smell the air and it was putrid and toxic and they felt like it was a burning in their eyes, like you were describing, and they weren't even maybe that close. I don't know how many miles away it was from where they lived, but changed the color of the sky, was a smell in the air, a toxic putrid smell. And I just think that what happens to the lot of us doesn't really matter to people, doesn't really matter to our government anymore. We can just, if we waste away, if our water is filled with chemicals, it's just, that's our problem, not theirs.
Right. Gee, that's actually a great point in that made. So, I mean, I want to hear your thoughts. Actually, it's not that I'm lying. It's like, I think I kind of set us up in a bad way. I'm saying all this data. It's like, what other answer can you give? Oh, sure, William. Let's bring it on into my neighborhood, you know? But so piggybacking on that, what Annette just said, people forget that in the first Iraq war, there was biological weapons they thought they used. And in 9/11, you know, all the gases and the cement and all that, everything coming together was affecting people long term. In both cases, the governments, whether it was state or local or our own federal government, were like, no, y'all just imagine things, or we can't figure it out because they didn't want to pay out anything. They don't take care of these people's issues. So when I hear all these toxic gases, that's what I actually think of. I don't think about today or tomorrow, but a couple of years down the road, when somebody starts hacking coffee, cancer starts to sprout up. I mean, what are your thoughts in that frame?
Well, I think there needs to be a different thought about how to do this, right? So, as you're talking, I'm thinking about San Onofre. That's a nuclear power plant. I mean, uranium is a lot more deadly to me than a lithium ion battery, right? So, but they've got that thing under control. I have no fear about that, right? But they have a container over the core, right? So I think that's what they need to do with these batteries. I mean, have some kind of a facility far away. I mean, I know that I saw next door, people were smelling this fire from Oceanside, right? Escondido to Oceanside. The wind's going the other way. So I don't know how they're smelling it going that way, going west, but the wind's going east. So they just have to think of a different way. I mean, do they need to make a concrete structure with walls that are 3 feet thick and and then put fire breaks between, you know, however many numbers of batteries. So one battery goes up, then it only takes out five others with it, but then it's self-contained. Do you have a facility that has carbon dioxide as the air inside so that, you know, if a fire does break out, it doesn't have much fuel to go through? I mean, I think they have to think through some solutions here, and this should be a wake-up call to whoever put this in place, as well as the county board. The county board needs to look at this and go, I don't think we want our people inhaling cyanide. I think that's a very bad thing. So
we're going to get into that, but you're right. You're right. Yeah. It's it's increasing. I'm talking storage centers where it can do mass damage. Yeah. But think of a grenade going off with the scooters. Electric cars that just caught on fire. And what people don't realize is water does not put it out. So, let me correct that. It takes tons of water, more water than is readily available to put it out, to the point the fire that we talked about already that happened here in Escondido, California, they gave up. They go, we're going to let it burn out. It's going to burn out. And the way they did set it up is like they were pouring water. The way these lithium storage centers are, think of one battery. They're all isolated from one another. So they were pouring all the water on the battery surrounding the ones that were on fire, because it was easier to do that, to keep them cool enough, than to actually try to put the actual batteries that were on fire out. So this sounds nice and pretty, and all these green activists, we got to do it, we got to do it. But they don't care or realize the damage and the catches. And the safety measures are better and greater for nuclear energy, because people don't realize, think about why it didn't spread. I mean, it worked, maybe not as well as it should have. I'm trying to remember all the way back in the 70s. I was a small child there. But there was like, these lithium batteries are doing more damage proportionately in terms of how they're set up than Three Mile Island is my point. And like San Onofre, the way it's set up for its safety. So, yeah. So there's also no comprehensive data on all the fires. So there are tons of fires out there that, because there's no database to start calculating. And I think we will be shocked. And I think that's purposely done by these big time investors and put money into this, along with the government officials that are bribed to get this into our neighborhoods. You know, overall, some of the statistics I found, 2017 to 2022, over 25,000 fire incidents related to lithium ion batteries. Now, in defense of the industry, I'm not talking about storage facilities. I'm speculating, but that number probably includes, you know, your Apple phone catching on fire, or is it just reported lithiums? But even then, if you can't put that out, it could cause your house to go up. You know, you're sleeping at night, boom, your phone catches on fire, because it rings, however it happens, boom, there goes your house. And I'm not being overly dramatic. You know, if you can't put it out, that's a problem. You know, there's 1,000% increase in injuries over the last 5 years in New York City. There's no standardized method for gathering data on these fires. So there's all kinds of issues. So we talked about Escondido. I'm not sure if you were aware until I brought it up to you and when I told you I wanted to do this report, but there was a fire in Valley Center. Were you guys, were either of you aware that there was a fire in Valley Center? A lithium fire?
No. Not at all.
See, to keep these on the down low. You know, it's like being gay in the 60s. Got to keep it on the down low. Maybe not the best politically incorrect joke to give. Specific dangers are intense heat generation up to 4,900 degrees Fahrenheit in some of these electrical vehicle battery fires. I mean, that stuff that will melt right through metal. I would imagine that if a Tesla catches on fire, it probably melts right through the car itself. Again, flammable gas release, explosion risk. We haven't talked about that, but the gas put up, I mean, it's just crazy. Now, the reason this is dear and dear to me is because this came up for Valley Center when I sat on our planning group board. And I call this part of the segment, Del Pilar calls out the philanthropic elites, because who needs integrity when you can have quid pro quo? And what I mean by that is they always get to the communities through donations. These companies, all of a sudden, they start donating. So we started hearing about this, and I voted against this back when I started. I want to say right around 2020. And 2020 was my last year, and I left the board. So we voted no, and the board, the same board of supervisors that now are supposedly wrestling with this devastating problem, they overrode us, and they voted to put it in our backyard. You know, we had previously voted 11-2 against this project, you know. And then when we lost the appeal, so to the audience and to YouTube, you're not aware. As an advisory group, we give the advisory and say, no, we don't want this. Well, the company, whatever it is, whether it's a Rite Aid building or whether it's a this lithium storage, they can appeal that, and it goes to a commission. And the board of supervisors, they pick the people who are on this commission. These commissions, and there's various commissions out there. Well, the commission said, well, we don't care what you have to say, Valley Center. We're voting to have those that lithium storage center in Valley Center. We can appeal their overriding us. They chose, the board chose not to appeal it by a vote of 8-5. My take was, whoa. How did we go from 11-2 now to 8-5? Well, they gave us, our community, a donation package of $500,000. And to a small community of Valley Center, where there's 10,000 of us, that's a lot of money going to our firefighters, et cetera. You know, I may have mentioned him to you and Ed or G, but there's an individual who I went to battle with all the time. When it comes to the issues, my take is that I don't care what your ideology is, what's best for the community. We align together. He was the first one that go, whoa, let's be careful on how we vote after somebody gives us a donation. My first question to you two is, it's easy to say, but in your service on the school board, has there ever been a situation where somebody may have offered something to somebody or any of that? Has that ever happened on the school board, G? And then we'll go to Annette.
I'm trying to think. I mean, we've got donations from parents for classroom things, but, you know, nothing on this kind of order.
So never this way, you guys' votes. So this was my first time where I saw it so blatant. And before this, I voted the 11-2. I was one of the no's on that. But before that, there had been like a $25,000 donation to a search and rescue. And I didn't understand it at first. Then I realized, oh, they work with the fire department, search and rescue. You know, if something happens, you know, people don't realize EMT, they're tend to be fire people, you know, and they're training and things. So the bribery came in. We voted 8-5. We got it done. And then we had a fire. And even the local media poo-pooed me. You know, when I had a private conversation, you want to make a big deal out of everything. And I'm like, no, the fire. So my take is it can happen here. It happened in Escondido. It will affect you two in Rancho Santa Fe, even though it's not there. Moving forward, how would you approach this as community leaders? And I am trying to put you on the spot here because you two are community leaders. People will look towards you with direction. My assumption is you're going to go, no, get this out of here. But how much would you be willing to fight on this now? I mean, it's something that you're aware of. And the reason I ask is, it's easy for us to spout it and talk about it, but I would now be willing to go out of the streets and go, guys, we got to talk about this. Is this something that we as community leaders need to now be doing?
Well, a lot of it would be questions,
no,
right? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. But I would say just we would go there and not just have this hardline position that, at least that's how I would approach it. I'm not unmovable, or is it immovable? I'm not immovable as long as you can answer all my questions. And the number one question would be safety, right? So now we have fires going on and toxic gases. And absolutely, I mean, that might be a deal killer, just walking up, getting public comment in front of our board saying, okay, what's the plan of this vendor to address these safety issues? because none of us want to inhale cyanide or
great point.
Yeah, and then that might kill it right there.
That didn't happen. So when they were pitching this, the fire marshal approved it. And obviously, the money, the fix was in. And I'm like, how are you going to fight that? Well, we haven't discussed it with TerraGen yet, but we're confident there will be a way to fight this. And my research was like, there is no way to fight this. It takes tons of water, you know, to fight this. And there's not enough water where we're at to sit there and combat it. But the fire department had already, the fire marshal. And the pushback I got, William, the fire chief, Joe Napier, who I actually like a lot, he's not making this decision. Yes, when they were trying to separate the fire department from, I'm like, who does the fire marshal work for? Joe Napier at the fire department. I'm like, well, then it is his decision at the end. You know, he could have gone to his fire marshal and says, no, you tell these people no. But the fix was in. And I like these people. Our fire department is some of the friendliest, nicest guys, and that's the problem. In politics, when you get to know somebody and you disagree, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to make that fight public and disagree with that person publicly. And I'm like, I like Joe. I love Joe Napier. He's actually one of the nicest individuals, and he has always battled for our community. But in this case, the fire department was wrong to have approved it. But it's one of those things, and that I don't want to be proven correct after a fire happens, and that's kind of what happened. And even then, you guys didn't hear about it. It was flushed under the table. This Escondido one was just too big to contain. So as a community leader, do you think we now have a responsibility to be out there for, and let me ask it from you, because you talk about your children a lot, too, and most of them are grown, but if I'm a parent, and my kids going to school, I'm out there, I would imagine most would be out there battling. Your thoughts?
Well, I still do have a few of them living at home, William. I know. I have a bunch of thoughts. The reason why you said the fix is in, and the reason why it bothers me so much, fire in California, everyone, that is one of the scariest thoughts to me, is fires. And they actually act like they're so concerned about fires in California, and yet they will be so reckless as to put these plants up that they know when these batteries are like highly flammable. So I don't get it. There's something I feel like I'm missing. Do you know what I mean? I'm missing a state of California that burns like every year in these horrendous and I can't even imagine terrifying fires people are running. It's the most terrifying thing I can think of. And they say they care so much about it. And they say they know how to like protect us, and they're so ahead of it, and they're being preventative, and then they put up one of these plants. Like what? Like, I'm sorry, what am I missing? I feel like I'm missing something. I don't feel like I'm understanding that these things don't all add up, and that is always my problem. That I guess as community leaders, we can do our best to get our voices out there and educate people when things seem to be and have direct opposition to one another. That we live in a state that has a lot more fires than a lot of other states. In Connecticut, when I lived there, I don't know, cat out of a tree, fire department, very bored. Here in California, the fire thing is real. So it is, you know, thousands of acres are burning as we speak. And they're going to put these plants with these highly flammable batteries. Now, I think the green thing is all about money. I'm sorry, I do. I think there are some real things we need to consider, but they always consider, I just say, when the things come up, when they say that they're attacking the green energy and they're attacking these problems, I always say to myself, yeah, who's profiting from it? And is it really a long-term solution, or is it sort of like a short-term quick fix and some people have their hands in it and they're all making a lot of money? Once again, to your point, at our expense, and maybe, as you said, to the middle-class communities more than other communities where these people over here might be a little bit louder, and they might have a little more power. They can push it further into the east. But I just think it is a absolute disgrace, and everyone shouldn't be able to be bought. But it is really hard for people to have integrity, I guess, because greed is a real motivator for a lot of people.
Right, I agree. And you're right, the fire. It's, at the end of the day, I don't want to be friends. I've mentioned in the podcast before, I've had the opportunity to meet certain leaders, and I don't want to. because I don't want to be friends with him. Because I don't like him. I don't like their policies. I'm like, and when you become friends, all of a sudden it's harder to go, you're wrong, you're wrong. And then the pressure is put on you. So with this fire, a potential moratorium came about, and they voted on it this past week. Well, they voted against a moratorium, but we got stronger policies. We just voted on to put that in place. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, great.
William, can I just make a point? I was at a meeting with our fire chief, and he was talking about putting in money, spending money to put in certain plants, the plants that don't burn as much as other plants. Okay, that great. I guess that is being preventative for fire. And then you're going to put in these batteries, and you're going to have, you know what I'm saying? Do you see how that doesn't add up?
Well, it doesn't add up, but they tell you it adds up. They tell you there's greater safety mechanisms in place. They can do it. Everything on paper looks nice and pretty until the fire actually happens. And the board of supervisors has blood on their hands for down the road, but you know good and well that it's going to get worse. Gene, you've been emphasized there. Anyhow, give me the final word on this before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, along with these battery facilities, I reached out to Tesla to get solar panels, and apparently my roof doesn't qualify. But along with it, they pretty much push two batteries on you. I get two power walls. And I think it was going to be $18,000 for the power walls, but then I was getting like $10,000 back or something. So it ended up being like $4,000 a power wall or something like that. And so I asked them where would I put it, and they said, "Well, you just hang it on the side of your wall." Now looking at this, I go, "Wait a minute, that's on the size of a lot of walls around this community. There's a lot of solar panels around." So it makes me wonder, I mean, if it can happen at a large scale, it can happen at a small scale. And I think that was just
solar panels, lithium? Your solar panels, are they made of lithium?
No, the power wall. So the solar panels will feed into the grid, but also into a battery reservoir. And then you can also feed the grid.
Okay. For the audience, that's what these lithium batteries are, storage centers for this type of energy, which in and of itself is another ripoff because they're taking our excess solar energy and then charging us back for it. See, that was the other issue that made me. I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm probably going to cut you off, but that pisses me off. It's like you're taking the excess energy that that I should be able to keep in some form or fashion and spitting it back out, and you're talking, oh, we're helping everybody. But yet you're charging me for my own energy twice. I apologize.
This could be a widespread thing, but I believe most house fires are pretty much contained to just the house, right? But again, you're going to have the toxic fumes, and maybe the radius of that will be smaller, and they're going to have to sit there with the fire hose for 3 days, like putting it on the actual battery itself. So I guess, you know, maybe this is a more widespread thing than we think at a larger scale. But smaller incidents.
No, you're right. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. All right. So, and like I said, this is personal to me because it's in my backyard, and I fought and lost it, and I knew I was going to lose. And the final caveat I'll say on this is part of the reason I lost, and part of the reason that we didn't win the appeal back, and it was an 8-5 vote, was because they were bribed. And I know good and well, TerraGen, the company, the one here about the center, they called board members. And that irked the hell out of me. You know, that should have been reported. I mean, and then I got in an argument with a couple of community leaders who were telling me, do you really view that as quid pro quo? I go, yes, it's a legal form of quid pro quo, but it's still, we're going to donate. Please don't vote or don't vote against this, but I can't tell you not to vote against it. You know, it's like, please. All right, let's move on. So, breaking news, Springfield's pet store turns into a Haitian restaurant. Now, I secured an interview with a local resident out of Springfield.
Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
I tried to get Clover, but Clover's agent said no go. So for the obvious, Clover is a dog.
Yeah, so Clover looked at our topics for today and decided not to show up to the
Exactly. Clover's like, no. You know? So there is a new demographic. Trump has a new lobby, a new support group, and it is vote for Trump. The cats are speaking. They want Trump to save them, you know. So I'm making a little bit of a joke about this. But it's a more serious issue. This topic of Haitians eating cats and dogs, I don't really care. I'm sure there's a few outliers. And what's happening is people are convoluting this, if that's the right word, convoluting this with the Haitian, the voodoo practice, you know, in Hollywood has helped to create this, you know, always showing the voodoo. I'll never forget one of my favorite episodes of Kolchak, Max Stocker from the 1970s, is a voodoo episode, you know, and they make the sacrifice of the rooster. So people are convoluting with that, conflating. Thank you, Big John. They're conflating this with, the voodoo practice. So again, there may be one or two stories that are true, but at the end of the day, it's I think it's what's that saying when they sit there saying politics? You know, look at the shiny object over here. Don't really look at the real problem. And I mean, the real problem is like in Aurora. It's where there are these gangs or the murders or the rapes or the crimes of people as a Latino. When Trump came down the elevator and said, you know, Mexico's not sending us their best for the illegals crossing the border, my take was, yeah, he's right. But then it was deemed racist. And as a Latino, I was looking at it from the perspective, yeah, you know, these governments, they encourage the criminals, those that come over the border. They encourage the poor to come over the border. Why? It takes away from their social service costs, their prison costs. So I didn't look at it as Trump saying that from a racist standpoint as much. That's what these countries kind of do. So I thought that, you know, this whole story about this whole, all these dogs, these animals in Haiti, to me, the Democrats love it because it's like, look at the shiny object here. Don't look at the actual crimes that are being reported by a lot of illegal immigrants. Your thoughts in terms of that, Gene?
Yeah. I mean, Trump does this thing where he brings up something like this, right? And, okay, it's a distraction, I think. But then I look on X the next day, and there's these songs and raps with him saying, eating the dogs, eating the cats, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, eating the dogs, eating the cats. So one guy, he's like a far-left socialist, he makes his whole song, and then he deletes it from his Twitter thread. You saw that? Because it was promoting Trump too much. So now Trump has all this excess promotion going on that, did he purposely do that? I don't know. But, so what it leads people to do is Google it. So I Googled it and I saw Springfield in 2020 had a population of 60,000. And over the last 4 years, 15 to 20,000 Haitian immigrants have been inserted into the community by the Biden administration. Right, they're seeking asylum or whatnot. How can the population grow by one third and you don't have repercussions? Right?
Right.
Can the infrastructure, the supply chain, the real estate, can that supply it? And are you going to talk about any of this stuff later?
I'm going to truncate this only because I don't want to stretch it out. I kind of find it humorous, but you're bringing up the serious side that we actually do need to talk about.
Yeah. Right, and just a town cannot absorb 30% or 30% growth in 4 years and not have issues, right? And this doesn't mean that some of these immigrants are not eating Toto the T-bone, right? or Rufus ribeye, like you don't know, right? So maybe it is happening. And it's not being reported. And that's where, I know you're going to go into the hunting claims and all that, but maybe it's happening. But, you know, I as a candidate would be very careful treading this water, right? And just say, there's allegations. So.
Right. So, Annette, to piggyback, I'm kind of deviating from my notes here, but she brought up an important point. And one of the issues I have always told people is this is these, These are the United States of America. As a Latino, as a Puerto Rican, as a Panamanian, we came and we assimilated. I am an American first. I'm proud of my culture, but I'm American first. How, and these people aren't, when I say these people, these immigrants, it doesn't matter if they're Syrian, if they're Haitian, if they're, wherever they're at, they're not assimilating. And you see it in Congress with some of these elected officials who push and promote their beliefs from their cultures before the American belief. This has nothing to do with racism. This has nothing to do with anything, but you need to assimilate and become an American and understand our way of life, our laws. And I just don't see how it's possible without, I don't want to say training, that's just a terrible word. It sounds derogatory, but it's like, how do we show these individuals, hey, this is America. This is how we do things. You used to do it with your neighbors, you know, going to church, but they're building their own communities within these cities, so they're not assimilating. She just talked about, what was it, 20,000 more, you said? How is it possible for a group like that to assimilate when they're building their own communities?
You're asking me, I think it's really hard. I think that they sort of cluster together and they carry on their tradition and culture within their own community, whatever those sorts of things may be that are very dissimilar from ours. Like, for example, there's a lot of that voodoo and stuff like in a place like Trinidad. And I knew a group of women and the East Coast who would all come from the islands there. And they continued to practice the things that they were familiar with and traditions and the cultures that they had. And that continued. I think it might be similar if you get people together from different places. I mean, it was similar that way, even in a place like Chicago, very different now, but way back when, all the people from the different places where all the immigrants came to, they had sort of their own traditions and their own neighborhoods. I think now places that people that come in from other countries, it's a lot less likely now that they integrate well. And I don't know why exactly that is, but I'm just going to say something that I found really interesting. It was a complete accident that a parent called me from the school today. And she said to me, my husband is from another country, and he's working really hard to become a U.S. citizen. And you know what, Annette? I had no idea how hard it was. And I thought, good for you for, like, doing it the right way. You know what I mean? It's been taking time, but he's been doing it the right way. And how many people have no respect for coming into the United States of America and going through the process of becoming an American citizen and doing it the right way. And she was, you know, telling me sort of like the process that it's been for him and how long it's taken and all of that. But they ignore it. They have no respect for it. They take it for granted. They come here and do what they want. They don't try to assimilate. They bring in their culture and don't have respect for ours. Sometimes they don't even take the time to learn. If I moved to Italy, which, William, I want to do every single day, but I would learn Italian. I would learn Italian, though. No, I would, because I think I love the English language. I'm sure I'd still be English speaking, obviously, and I would, but I would feel like a duty. I would feel a duty wherever I went, if I was going to go live there, to assimilate and be a part of that community.
Well, you know, I agree. On a lighter note, though, you know, I think Kamala used the bloodbath term wrongly, because they are getting it together. It could be a bloodbath over there. I mean, look at these guys. These felines are just getting it together. They're arming themselves to the teeth, people. Look at that. They even got Donald Trump there, you know. That's a bloodbath Kamala should have brought up. Those poor felines, who could have thought? You know? On a seriousness, you're absolutely right, though, Annette. My mother, when she became a citizen, and I saw some of the questions. I was like, oh, my God. Even to this day, I still marvel. Those people who become citizens, they know more about America at that point in time than the kids in school, because they're not being taught these values, you know. So, and it does bother me when somebody from a different country comes here and doesn't want to assimilate. And I will go toe-to-toe with any leftist, any progressive, any Democrat, anybody who says, why should they? Or why are you trying to take their culture? No, I'm not trying to take their culture. I'm proud of my culture, but I'm an American first to remain the country we are, to be able to go from poor to rich. Capitalism is the least evil economic, whatever the term is, theory or economic practice that allows that to happen. I just did a podcast, Red, White, and Rude, and talking about Milton Friedman on Phil Donahue and how he said, how he talked about everybody serves in their own self-interest. What president has actually appointed somebody because of their virtuousness? No, that's not how it works. But, and if capitalism is evil, okay, fine. What's better? What can uplift the poorest of the poor into a middle class, upper middle class, into wealth? Look at, you know, a lot of examples. Even Caesar, you know, the dog, the whisperer. You know, he was an illegal, came here. He's the type of person, immigrant, you do want. Look where he is now, multimillionaire, and he helps people. So, but he assimilated and he understood what America is about. Gee, looks like you want to say something then.
Yeah, no, I mean, my parents came here, and they assimilated to some degree. They both became citizens and all that, but, you know, they still retained a lot of that Indian culture, eating the Indian food. I've been going through my dad's VCR tapes, 100 of them. They're all Indian movies, and that's just, you know, so you're never going to get 100% assimilation, right? They're not going to be full-blooded Americans. And my dad loved this country, right? And moved here in 70-something and was here till the day he died. So it's hard to expect someone who comes here past the age of, I don't know, 12 to try to assimilate fully. Because at least in those early years... Yep.
I got a question about that. Is it assimilate or we say assimilate, but there's a part two to say somebody who is older, like your parents, like my parents. Maybe it's not as much assimilate for them as respect this way of life.
Yes.
This culture, yes. This right. Country. And that's what your dad probably did.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at these things going on in different parts of this country, what's going on in Europe. Where you get people from the Middle East, right? So there's a reason why the women are head to toe covered because that's their culture. Then they come here and then they see women wearing mini skirts and yes. Halter tops and they think that's an invitation because in their culture, no one wears that. So there's, you know, you're just going to always deal with that, right? And you have to be careful when you bring large groups of people in and not vet them. And that's, I believe that's what we're doing right now. It's just asylum seekers, just come on in. And they get on a plane and fly into Springfield, Ohio. And who knows what's going on there? And of course, the media is going to try to cover it up and say, well, there's no evidence. Everything's hunky-dory right there. But what I was going to say earlier is that I saw a public comment by a guy who got kicked out of his house because the government's paying for the immigrant rent, and it's three times higher than what the citizens are paying. So what are the landlords going to do? Do I want
just throw
out a number, right? Do I want $1,000 a month from an American citizen who's been living here for 10 years, or I can get $3,000 a month because the government's paying for these immigrants, and maybe they're, you know, stuffing in 12 people into a home or whatever. I don't know the scenario or situation. But if that's true, because I don't know that's true necessarily, but if that's true, that's terrible. That's terrible. I mean, why is Ohio Trump's up by, I think it's like 14%. I mean, it's the reddest it's ever been. And I think it's because of policies like this. If that's what's happening, people are angry in the Midwest.
No, you're right. I also think he's up because he's gained the canine vote here. You know, these guys in the death vote. You know, they're surrounding. He's saving him. It's going to be a landslide. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm trying to make this kind of light, but it's kind of hard with G without the data there. But it's true, G. You're actually correct. Now, to get serious again, immigrants are killing Americans. And people are like, well, it's only here or there, and Americans kill other Americans. Yeah, but we're Americans, and we go to prison. Instead, it's become a revolving door for some of these. And I'm not trying to pick on illegals, but if they weren't here, that American would not have died. So I do have issues like that. A child was murdered by a Haitian immigrant not long ago. Local health services have been overwhelmed, as you were implying there, G, in terms of the influx. This is one that was shocking to me, and it shouldn't have been, because in the military, I see this data all the time in other places. There's a rise in communicable diseases, TB, tuberculosis.
Thank you.
And HIV. The HIV released the stutter for me. But it shouldn't be again. We're bringing in individuals from different countries where the education, the we work hard towards education, towards immunization, towards everything to keep these diseases down. It's why I'm not an anti-vaxxer, because I'm like, certain vaccines work well, like smallpox, chickenpox, things like that. Local schools, this is the one where I had seen firsthand as a teacher's aide. Local schools struggling to accommodate newcomers who don't speak English. As a Spanish teacher's aide, I would be an interpreter, and I saw all the American kids. And it wasn't white kids. They always tried to make it as white kids. So it was black, white, and Latino kids who were, American citizen kids were being held back because of the Spanish kids who did not speak English. The teacher could not go faster than what those kids could understand. So I saw that firsthand. And Gene, what you're talking about, the increased rents, making it unaffordable for the Springfield residents because the government's putting more money for the Haitians who aren't here legally. They're not illegal, just so the public knows. They are here legally through it's kind of, I don't know what laws it is, but they are
like asylum laws, I believe.
Got, there you go. So, Annette, your thoughts on what I just mentioned in terms of the devastation that one half of the media doesn't want to report on, that is actually devastating to the actual people living in these areas.
Yeah, I guess it's easy to try to ignore it and try to pretend that it's not happening. And especially if you haven't been directly impacted by it, if it wasn't your daughter or brother or a husband or your family. So I think a lot of it is the game of pretend. I think the truth is out there though, William, and I think most people are aware of the devastation, of the impacts that it's had, like, you know, with crime and the economy. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it really beyond that. I just think that it is, I think that more than anything, it's just like, it's very, very sad how actually at the end of the day, those people who might not even realize it are being used. That's how I...
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. They are being used. And you're right. This is what I hate about politicians. This is what I hate about life in general. One of the things that irks me is people do not care because they're not affected. The only reason immigration has become such a massive topic now nationwide is because of what red state governors started to do. Oh, you're a sanctuary city. Sanctuary state? Okay, we're going to ship them all to you. And what happened with New York? Martha's been here. How quickly people forget. They had one just a couple 150 and they shipped them out in less than 24 hours. And then made some excuse. Then New York City. Oh, we welcome everybody. A couple of years later, they don't want it now. So, let's leave it at this in terms of the Haitian immigrants killing and eating pet cats and park ducks because, there's, like I said, probably a few outlier reports out there, but Snopes, which is traditionally a very, very leftist, and have been caught in lies themselves regarding how they interpret the news. They themselves, instead of coming out and stating false to this report, they came out and they stated unfounded, which is a far meaning we don't know. So even Snopes is not willing to go false like Democrats are implying. And my point in showing this before we log off here is that we don't know the true story. The true travesty here is that the mainstream media has sat there and said, well, the Ohio governor said this, or the city manager, which it turns out the city manager, Gene, and that rent, he has spaces that he rents out. So he has a conflict of interest. He wants these immigrants there. So you would think that these news organizations would send reporters there to actually investigate. There was this man who sat there, spoke at one of the city councils, said, I'm out there every day. He goes, I've seen them chop off the necks of geese, etc. So I don't know how true it is, but this could be ended if these news agencies actually did their jobs and investigated versus asking Ohio governor or mayor who doesn't want to look bad and is going to say, something that benefits them or a city manager who owns buildings and is renting them out. And who knows, I'm guessing, but he may be renting them out to immigrants and collecting that big bonus. So he has a conflict of interest.
I just think about, so now Springfield is a city of 80,000, right? He brought in 20,000 new people. So, and as far as I saw, the population didn't go 80 to 60 and then, oh, look, there's room for 20. Let's put them there. No, it was pretty much busting at the seams. So where are all these people living, right? You got 20,000 people, so they have to either displace people or they have to build homes like Russia in the middle of a pandemic or towards the tail end of it, rush a bunch of construction jobs. Then they have to build schools, right? So these classrooms that were maybe 30 people, now you have to add 10 children to each, right? Because you just increased by 30%. So now these classrooms are 40 people. I'm just throwing out numbers, right? But it's just astounding to me that the city has capacity for these people. And who knows if they can bring the food in. I mean, maybe there was one person who ate Toto, right? Maybe. Oh, look at that dog. I'm hungry. Well, now what Trump said is true. Right? I mean, technically, Trump said dogs. So now you just need two dogs eaten, and what he said on the debate stage is true. So, yeah. You know, you can't disprove it either.
Exactly.
Where is the journalistic integrity?
Yeah.
Is there any journalistic integrity? Do we not even have an expectation for that any longer? You know what I'm saying?
No, we don't. We do not. That's what's pathetically sad is nobody on the other side. See, this is what gets me about ideology. It's, you know, as a conservative, I being John can attest to this. I hammer the Republicans as much as I hammer the Democrats because I'm like, it's about the people. That's why I loathe the Republican State Party here in California. They are not for the people at all. But it bugs me when I'm like, don't you want a fair media? I mean, you may agree with it today, but tomorrow you may say the wrong thing, and you're going to go, where's the media to sit there and find the truth? And you're going to be shocked that they're not around. Well, you help precipitate this, you know? So I guess, and to the audience, in a nutshell, what G is talking about is the overwhelming of our services, whether it's welfare, social, school, education. It's an overwhelming. You know, we may not know the numbers exactly, but you don't throw 20,000-30,000 people on a community and not expect to serve the net, the safety net, not to be overwhelmed. And that's what's happening. You don't need to know the numbers except to understand 20,000 people thrown into a community of 60,000 is going to overwhelm all services there.
Not only that, but when you have more money than you have supply, right? You have more money than you have goods, that causes inflation. So now you're bringing in all these people and then you're saying we're going to pay their way, but you don't have enough goods, so the prices go up.
Yep,
so that's another cause for inflation in the last few years. And you know, just a couple days ago, inflation had a surprise bump up. So, yeah, it's terrible what's happening.
And with that, Mr. G. Mangani has the last word. Real quick, in 10, 50 seconds, tell people where they can find you, G, and then this and that.
Yep, find me on X at RSFG, and I'm trying to be active and retweet things that I find interesting. That's where you can find me.
So just retweet our show, and you're good. Miss Annette, tell us quickly about where they can find you and your book.
Where fairy tales go. It's still on Amazon and I think other, maybe like a Barnes and Noble here and there. But, Annette_Ross5. I gotta get better. Okay. You guys are gonna get me on social media. It's gonna happen. I'm not super active. I need to get active.
Yeah, what you have is you have two old people here. That's what it is. I'm kidding. To everybody else, do not forget to like and share. And thank you for all the love you gave us in our post-debate show. Our numbers were up. And do not forget you can find this podcast along with our great libertarian interview that Big John had just a few days ago talking about the back page story. And it's important to you. You should check it out because it crosses all ideological lines, barriers, parties, because it's about our rights as Americans and how the government is slowly taking those away. You can find that podcast along with our sports podcast, our pop culture podcast at grumpyinsmedia.com, and as well as social media platforms, Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora. So until next time, my friends, I am William Del Pilar for G and that. This is Fired Up, and I bid you adieu.